Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Hello everyone, it's Jesse Green here. Welcome back to SavvyDentist.com and to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. It is fantastic to have your company for another episode of the show. Now, if you are a motivated, driven practice owner and you want to get more from your practice, then I'm going to invite you to come across to the Savvy Dentist Facebook group, because in that group, we've got some tools, we've got some training, we've got a community that's focused on helping you achieve what you want from your practice, whether it's having a high income, having more free time, maybe it's about having more patients in the practice, maybe it's about having a high-performing team. All of that and a whole lot more is going to be covered and spoken about and with tools and training in the Savvy Dentist Facebook group. So all you need to do is head across to Facebook, find Savvy Dentist in the search bar, and then once you've located the group, answer a few key questions and we'd love to welcome you in. And it's pretty simple, as straightforward as that. So do that and we'd love to see you in the group. Now, today we're in for a treat. My guest today is Anthony Lay, and Anthony is Australia's most sought-after speaker. He's an entertainer, he's a mentalist. And so what we're going to be talking to Anthony about are the principles of persuasion, the principles of influence, and how he's able to create outcomes and ta-da moments in the work that he does. But we're also going to explore his background, because no one starts out life as being a mentalist. And we're going to talk about his journey from being a carpenter and joiner and how that business went into how he transitioned from one role in his life to another and all the ups and downs along the way. It's a really good conversation, really fun, really entertaining. And you'll notice in this conversation, Anthony and I start hatching a plan about a few things. And if you listen closely, you'll hear what we've got cooking as a result of this podcast. So I hope you enjoyed this podcast. I enjoyed it. You're going to love Anthony. And if you want to find out more about Anthony, of course, head across to his website, anthonylay.com, and that's L-A-Y-E. And we'd love to introduce you to him there. He's got a YouTube channel and all of those sorts of things. So go and check out his stuff. But for now, here's the conversation with Anthony. I hope you enjoy it as much as I enjoyed recording it for you. Anthony, thank you so much for joining us here on the Savvy Dentist Podcast. Great to have you here, mate. And welcome from the Gold Coast where you are. And I'm obviously here in Canberra. How's your day been, mate? All good?
It's been good. It's been good. It's a little bit windy outside at the moment, but I'm tucked up nicely in this studio now, having a good conversation with you.
I guess one of the things I always think about is I can hear your British accent. I know you're living at the Gold Coast and I know you're a mentalist, and I'm thinking, well, there's a journey and a story in there, and I'm really keen to understand how you came to be where you are doing what you do. What got you to this point?
I'll try and do a long story short for you. So before I got into the world of mentalism and speaking, I had a joinery business back in the UK. So my doors, windows, staircases, that kind of thing. Mm. So I started my business when I was 21 back in the UK. I wasn't ever somebody that was, I would say, a natural at being able to speak to other people, whether that was one-on-one or definitely not speaking up on stage or anything like that. And I learned very early on in the business that the way that I communicated was really important to how successful I was going to be in business. Being 21, a lot of my customers, I dealt a lot with the building trade. So a lot of my customers were sort of 40 plus, and they'd walk into the workshop, see this weird looking 21-year-old, and they would always ask if the boss was around. So I learned very quickly that the way that I communicated was really important. Now, if you then take the other side of it, where I used to feel quite socially anxious. I saw David Blaine performing on TV once and was absolutely fascinated with what he was doing. And me being naturally very curious and wanting to know how everything's done, I went on this little discovery of trying to find out about magic. What I found out, though, is that magic was also a tool that I could use to cheat my way to being interesting in an interaction. It was a way of being able to impress people without having to necessarily have lots of knowledge or anything like that. For a while, the magic became a tool that I used to be interesting, but it was also something that I used as a bit of a hobby. So with the joinery business, I ended up employing about 7 guys. So it's a small business, but I had some guys that worked for me. And one of my clients came into the workshop one day, and the guys who worked for me knew that I did a bit of magic just as a bit of a hobby for a bit of fun. And they said to Rob, they said, "Hey, Anthony does some magic. you should get him to come and perform some magic at one of your cabaret nights. So this client of mine also ran these cabaret nights once a month. So I was like, yeah, okay, I'll give it a go. Had no idea what to do in a sort of professional, where you're actually asked to go and do it rather than just down the pub to be cool.
Yeah.
And I was that nervous on the night of doing these tricks of going around tables that I drank two bottles of white wine before I even got up to do any magic tricks. But anyway, obviously I did okay, because he sort of said, well, look, can you come back and do these every single month? So that was my first entry then into the world of entertainment. Mm. So I had these two little channels running side by side. The business that I had, unfortunately, being a small business, I had a number of bad debts. I had a few customers go bust on me. Mm. It was in that moment, and we can dive a bit more into this because there's quite a lot I learned from that situation. Mm. But it was in that time there that I tried to sort of figure out how to fix the business. It all started falling apart around me. And I came out to Australia to try and sort of sort my head out. So I took a bit of a break, and so I need to get some clarity. So I came out to Australia and fell in love with the place while I was out here. So I ended up winding up the business. And when I moved out to Australia, I started working for a guy in Sydney doing some carpentry work, some the handyman. He had a whole bunch of properties. Mm. And I really did not enjoy working for him. But I'd done a few of these gigs back in the UK, and I thought, well, I wonder if I could do this as a living. Could I make some money out of this? So I then started to see what opportunities there were around. I started to work in restaurants doing close-up magic. And what I found was that the area of mentalism, which is a branch of magic, the way that I like to say it, it's halfway between magic and hypnosis. It's more focused around the illusion of magic of the mind. Mm. I became really interested in that. And so worked on a show to bring that to life, because that was more of a stage thing rather than going around tables for me. And one thing led to another. And I'm trying to keep the story as short as possible. That's okay. One thing led to another. And I applied to work on cruise ships, got accepted to work on some of the cruise ships. So I went on as a guest entertainer. So I got a chance to run this show in. And that started me then on the journey of becoming a full-time entertainer. I then did a few corporate events. They were then, well, can you teach this stuff to us? This would be really handy. Being a mentalist would be really handy for our sales teams. And I thought, well, I can't teach you the mentalism, but I can teach you some of the skills that I know as a mentalist to help you become more persuasive in the way that you communicate. And then one thing has led to another. And yeah, I've spent over the last decade now being a professional speaker. And that was somebody who used to hate even a one-on-one conversation with somebody.
What a transformation, and what a journey as well. Just to pick up on the big thread you gave me to come back to, which was the lessons learned about that business, because I don't want to kind of just gloss over that and think about the mentalism totally, because although that's something I'm very keen to talk about, and I'm sure you get a lot of questions around that all the time, but I do want to understand that business and what you took away from the business in terms of lessons and insights, and maybe even if there's things you kind of look back on and go, well, you know, I would have done this differently or done that differently or whatever. What came out of that for you?
The first thing that I will say there is that when I look back, and I often get asked this question, is if you could go back in time and do anything differently, what would you do differently? My honest answer there is absolutely nothing. Mm. I would never do anything differently, because everything that I have done has brought me to the place whereabouts I am now. I really enjoy the way that my life is right now.
Awesome.
And had I done anything differently, and that's the whole sliding doors kind of thing, what would have happened? Mm. So I'm glad that I didn't do anything differently. I'm glad that I have faced all of the challenges that I have faced. The big learning, though, that I got from the business. So I had seven guys working for me. This was a business, and I'm sure a lot of your audience are going to resonate with this. When you're a small business owner, this is your pride and joy. This is your baby. You invest all of your energy, all of your passion into this business to grow it. And most of the time we start out on our own. We might have one other person helping us, but I started out my business on my own. Mm. And over the space of 5 or 6 years, I grew it to be one of the most successful joinery companies in the southwest of the UK. I had seven guys working for me, loads of work coming in. But when you're a small business and you are impacted by a company or a client or a customer going bust on you, and that has a huge impact on your cash flow, it causes a lot of stresses and a lot of strains. And I was very unfortunate in that I had a number of clients go bust on me almost one after the other. It was in the space of just a few weeks.
Oh, wow.
I'd lost hundreds of thousands of pounds. I was so in the business trying to fix it.
Mm.
And it was just, I could just see cracks forming everywhere around me. And as much as I was trying to patch these cracks up, it wasn't fixing it. It was just making it kind of look okay for a moment.
Mm.
What I really didn't realize was the impact that it was having on me.
Yeah.
And the way that it was affecting the way that I acted and the way that I behaved, it sent me into this whirlwind of negativity. The way that I like to describe it is, nowadays with Instagram and that kind of thing, we can take a photograph, we can put a filter on it.
Mm.
We can make things look different just by that filter. And it was like somebody had taken a filter of negativity and put it clearly over my eyes. So I just saw the whole world as doom and gloom. I saw that everything in the world was out to try and take this business that I had spent years growing.
Mm-hmm.
It was trying to put it down. It was trying to take it down. There was like the universe was against Anthony. That's the way that I saw it.
Yeah.
And one night I was out with a friend, and it wasn't until she sat me down and she said these words, and these words completely changed everything for me. She said, "You're a really nice guy, but you are so negative, nobody wants to be around you."
Oh, wow. Oh, gut punch.
Yeah. And that was, even saying it now, I've got goosebumps going up my arms, because it was like somebody had suddenly flicked a switch inside my mind. It was, I suddenly realized that I needed to be very deliberate. I needed to choose. I needed to decide how I was turning up, how I was acting and behaving, that would then have an impact on everybody that was around me. And from that day, there is not a single day that goes past where I don't ask myself this one. So if your listeners take one thing away from this podcast, and it's this one thing.
Hang on, I've got to do a drum roll. There we go.
I ask myself this one question, and that is, how should I be turning up?
Ooh.
That one question has led me to the point where I ended up moving out to Australia. I ended up throwing myself into the entertainment world. Whenever I felt that I was putting myself right out of my comfort zone, it was the same question that I came back to. So it's the one thing that's led me now to the point where, and I don't want to blow my own trumpet here, but I'm now one of the leading speakers in Australia. And it's all come from asking myself that one question.
Mm.
There is three ways in which I want you to think about asking this question. Number one is asking yourself that question, how should I be turning up for myself? So when you wake up in the morning, how are you turning up for you? Are you instantly getting influenced by outside sources, by checking your emails, your phone, social media, the news? Or are you spending just a few moments to decide who you need to be in that day? What kind of energy do you need to bring for you so that you can turn up for yourself really well that day? The second place in which I ask this question, and this is now where this question is used multiple times throughout the day, but how are you turning up for, so let's just say that you're turning up into the workplace.
Mm-hmm.
How are you turning up there? And then you could walk in and straight away be on a telephone call, which then instantly triggers you in some way. You might have a complaint, you might have to deal with a staffing issue, which then affects you. But then the way that that's affected you, then go into the next client or the next team member that you meet, that's going to influence and affect the way that you interact with them. So when I was a kid, used to run through the fields, and you'd come out the other end of the field, and you have all these little seeds stuck on your trouser legs, little burrs.
Yep.
And I think that each day is a bit like that. We'll go through the day and we'll pick up these little seeds, these little bits of emotional baggage, these little mini traumas that happen throughout the day.
Mm-hmm.
And unless we take a moment to actually look down at our legs and see what seeds we're carrying, we don't realize that they're there.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to constantly be checking in with ourselves and going, okay, right, that conversation with that client really stressed me out. That conversation with my staff member really stressed me out. Okay, I need to brush that off. I need to take just 2 moments for myself to get rid of that, so that the next interaction that I go into, I'm being deliberate. I'm turning up for that person the way that I need to turn up for them.
Yeah, wow.
So you're doing that multiple times throughout the day. If you ever go from one telephone call to the next, you ask that question. One room to the next room, you ask that question. If you're in between clients coming in, you ask that question each and every single time. How should I be turning up?
Mm.
And then the final place, Roberto, you want to be asking this, is at the end of the day, because I know that the people listen to this, like, you're busy, you spend the entire day feeling really hurried and busy. You're in work before most people. You leave work after everybody else.
Mm.
Before you walk in that front door at the end of the day to your family, to your loved ones, those people who care about you. Yes, they want to support you. They want to hear about what you've had to go through that day, but they want to hear about it in a way that isn't unloading lots of negativity onto them. So before you put that key in the door at the end of the day, ask yourself, how should I be turning up for those that care about me? How should I be turning up for those who I'm going to take this journey through life with together? That one simple question, how should I be turning up? Game changer.
What a gift. What a gift that that friend of yours gave you. Because honestly, that seems like a real inflection point in your life. That sounds like it was the moment where possibility opened up. And man, I don't know that person, that friend of yours, but whoever they are, geez.
Susie Wood.
Well, Susie Wood, go you. And I hope you send her a Christmas present every year, mate, because she sounds like a true friend. Well, the reason I say this is because it takes a true friend to have the courage to say that, right? Because not everyone's going to tell you that. And I think that's really wonderful. Okay, so you've gone through this situation. The joinery business has gone through the cracks appearing, you madly trying to fill the cracks, probably realizing that that's not ultimately what you want to do. You've come to Australia, you've taken the opportunities that have been presented to you, and you've now, you know, as you said, you've become a very well-known speaker. You're well-regarded in the entertainment industry and of course, in the speaking industry as well. Who did you become in that process? Because I've been thinking a lot about the topic of identity, and identity is something that I find really fascinating, and how we see ourselves is often how we interact and show up, right? And so I wanted to ask you about your own identity shift in that process. You know, I started off life as a joiner or a carpenter. Now I'm a super successful, you know, speaker and mentalist. What's been the shift in your identity, you know, in that process? You know, years ago when you looked in the mirror, who did you see? And now who do you see?
That's a really good question. My journey in that transition, I think as you go through when maybe there is some new skills that you are learning. So when I went from being a carpenter to then being in the entertainment world, I think you look at the role models that are around you. There's the old classic line of you become the average of the five people that you spend your time with. And there is a lot of truth in that, but not necessarily just in the people that you spend your time with, but those people that you see that are inspirational, that you learn from. You might not see them face to face, but you might consume their content on YouTube. You might watch TED Talks that they're presenting, all that kind of thing. I think that for a while, you start to borrow from them a sense of confidence in, well, if that works for them, then that could work for me. Now, I think it's really important here that you don't try to be somebody else.
No.
But you borrow components and bits from different people that you can see that work, that resonate with you, that help you while you're learning what your character needs to be. You borrow from them that confidence as a kind of thing that's there for the meantime. And at some point in time along your journey, something clicks, and then all of a sudden you become you. You realize this new thing. And I think, again, a lot of defining moments here. When I got into the world of entertainment, I was really nervous for a good few years in the initial phase of that career. And so I had so Derren Brown is a mentalist that I've always been a massive fan of. I suppose I was borrowing from him some performance styles, which I really liked. And I remember being on a cruise ship, and I'd always really worried about, well, what happens if I look stupid in front of people? What happens if I forget the trick that I'm going to do? What happens if the person who I pull up on stage tries to mess me up? What happens if they don't do what I say? All these negative things. I remember being on a cruise ship one night, and I went, you know what? It's not really about me, this. This whole show is not about me. The problem with entertainment is, unfortunately, it can have a massive impact on your ego. And you can become that whole bit of a prima donna with the whole entertainment world.
Only green M&Ms in the green room for you, right?
And all that kind of thing. And look, I think I fell into that trap for a little while. I did get a little bit big fan boots. And I remember one night thinking, do you know what? This isn't about me. This is about me turning up for the audience. And I remember walking out on the stage that night. I was on a P&O cruise ship at the time. And I just went, you know, this show is about the audience. This is about me delivering the audience a really good time. And I just allowed myself to be me. I stopped trying to be anybody else. I built up the confidence to be able to stand on the stage. I was happy with that. I knew my show. So I just went, you know what? I'm just gonna let myself go out there and just be me. And the day that I did that was another game-changing moment in my entertainment career, because the way that the audience reacted to me was completely different. It was like there was a different energy between me and the audience. They could tell that I was now being me.
Mm.
And ever since then, I am now just me. Whenever I walk out there, if I say something that makes me look silly, I don't even care anymore, because I know that if I'm authentically me, they will warm to me.
Mm.
And I think that that's a really powerful place, because now I don't have to try to hide behind anything.
What's that connection piece like? How does that show up for you in terms of the relationship you have with your audience? Now, the reason I'm asking this question is because dentists go and put on a show every single day. It's like, how do you show up? And one of the things is that you go to see your patients. Patients aren't always happy to see you, unfortunately. It's not always as reciprocated as you might expect. But there is an element of performance in what we do with how we do it, right? We've got to be able to, the patient says, there's no offense, doc, I don't want to see you. We've heard it a million times. Or, they all like to tell the joke about how the last dentist had the knee on the chest and we try not to roll our eyes for the millionth time kind of thing, right? And so there is an there is an element of performance in what we do with dentistry as well. So I'm wanting to ask you about the power of authenticity and the power of almost letting go of trying to be something else and what that delivers you.
For me, I believe that when you turn up authentically as yourself, A, you come across as way more confident. And once you're more confident, there is a trust and a belief that just energetically happens between you and another person.
Yeah.
It's not something that you can measure.
Yeah.
It sometimes sounds a little bit woo-woo. And I'm a mentalist, so the whole woo-woo side of things, like psychics and that kind of thing, I find it fascinating. Whether I believe it or not is another thing. But one thing that I do 100% believe in, and I believe in it because I've experienced it, is a transference of energy. So going back to the question, how are you turning up? If the way that you turn up will impact the other person. If we look at this from a scientific point of view, we got mirror neurons and all this kind of thing, and that's how we build rapport. The energy that you show up with, the passion, the enthusiasm that you show up with will leak into the other person, and it will influence them. It will build this element of trust. It's an amazing, amazing thing. And it sounds woo-woo, but I've experienced it. For every corporate event that I do, I have to do a briefing call beforehand.
Yes.
And the number of times that I've been on the call with the organizer, and they've said, so let's take lawyers, for example, or engineers. They go, they don't really like to get involved. You probably won't get much of a reaction from them. And I'm like, well, don't tell me that, because I know that if I go there with the right energy, then they're going to become involved.
Yeah.
They're going to want to get involved, because there isn't – I'm dropping lots of little life lessons here. So another thing that I go by every single day is there is not a single person – I normally swear when I do this. I'm not going to swear on your podcast. So.
I swear. Like, I'm an ex-sailor, mate. I can swear a lot. So, yeah.
For theatrical purposes, I'm going to use a swear word here. But there is not a single person that wakes up and says, do you know what? I hope I have a really shit day. Yeah. There's not a single person that wakes up and says that. And I approach every single interaction that I have like that. Every single presentation that I do with that, every single person that I meet, they want to have a good day. So if it's just giving a compliment, giving a smile, the energy that I bring, if I can target that towards having a good day, then the world becomes a much better place. I have more fun. They have more fun. We build more trust. I make more friends. Everything's good.
Everything's good. Exactly right. And it's really interesting, again, for the audience listening who are predominantly dentists or others as well, those moments of connection, you can feel that. And I'm a really analytical, rational kind of guy. But I can also tell you that there is a whole bunch of stuff that doesn't lend itself to easy analysis, but you can feel it. And just because you can't analyze it doesn't mean it's not there. And so I'm very much a believer in the concept of energy transference. I'm very much a believer in the ability to be in rapport and, as you say, the mirror neurons and all the rest of it. And hard to measure, hard to quantify, but it's there. And I think there's some real value there. And in dentistry, we see that as well. You can feel when you've got a degree of rapport and trust with your patient and they have that with you. And it feels great. It's lovely. It's one of the most precious things you can have because you're literally going to be putting your hands inside their mouth. So, you want that. One of the things I'd really love to ask you about, and I'm sure you get asked this all the time, but because, you know, really honestly, your business card is really cool. Right, I'm a mentalist, right? That's a good thing, right? Like, what do you do? Well, like, you're going through immigration back to the UK and they ask for your occupation, mentalist. Surely someone's going to ask you, hey, dude, tell me what a mentalist is and does, because I haven't seen it really on too many occupational forms before.
I will never write down on a form that I'm a mentalist.
What do you write? Entertainer.
No, I always write down self-employed.
Do you know the guitarist, Eric Clapton? Do you know what he writes on his immigration forms when he goes through customs? Rock God.
That's pretty cool.
I know he can probably get away with it. But anyway, so you write self-employed. But for those of us who perhaps are less familiar with what a mentalist is, what you do, because it does sound quite interesting and curious. Like it's a foreign land to us. What does it involve?
So a mentalist, the way that I like to describe it whenever I'm giving a corporate presentation is that by a mentalist, it means that I lie for a living. And I lie by pretending to be psychic.
You're not a politician, are you, mate?
But from a perspective of trying to explain it a bit more without trying to be necessarily funny, mentalism is a branch of magic. By using different techniques, whether that's some misdirection, verbal misdirection, statistics, some things are done psychological, some things might be based on hypnotic language. A fusion of different things are used to make it appear that I might be able to read somebody's mind or influence their choices. So I'll often get people come up and go, how did you know? How did you make that happen? The one thing that I will say is there is a process in everything that I do.
Of course.
However, you don't know, most of the time, you don't know what my outcome's going to be. So it allows me to be flexible with my process in order to achieve an outcome that I want to achieve to make a ta-da kind of moment. So if we were to bring it back to people skills, it is the ability to manipulate in the nicest possible way people to create a moment where something strange happens.
Mm. I totally understand and respect that magicians never reveal their tricks, and I'm never going to ask you to do that. But what I want to understand is process and flexibility, because I think this is really important. There's some parallels for business there as well, and creating moments. So without kind of trying to go from the magic of what you do and trying to deconstruct it into something really concrete and analytical, because I don't want to take away the beauty of what you do, because it is beautiful and it's art. But I also think business is art too. And I want to understand a little bit how you see the ability to create process and have that flexibility and how that might relate to business.
So with a show, for example, I will know what I want the end outcome to be. So I'll normally have a brainstorming creative session where I will go, do you know what would be an amazing moment that would make everybody just go, what? So I always start with the end in mind, and then I work backwards from that point.
Yeah.
And what are the steps that I need to take? What are the tools? What are the skills that I know that can help me get to that place?
Mm-hmm.
And this does relate to business as well. It is, whereabouts do you want to be?
Yep.
5, 10, whatever that time frame is. But then working back, what are the steps that have to happen? So if I wanted to get somebody to, say, choose a certain word in a book, I would then go back to all the skills I know. And okay, so first of all, how can I make them, if I've given them a selection of, say, 7 books and I want them to get onto one, what are the tools and techniques that I know that I can end up with somebody having that right book in their hand? Go into my tool bag, work out what those things are. Okay, that's there. How can I get them to choose the right page? What are the tools that I know? What are the methods that I can use to target them? And so I would just break it down piece by piece until I end up at that end goal. Being aware that things might not necessarily go to plan on track. So, so if that doesn't happen, then what can I do to bring it back on track? Mm. And then I think we come into the sort of analogy of an aeroplane flying. It's constantly going off course and you keep on correcting it back in. That will happen during a show. I'll pull somebody up onto the stage. They won't react the way that I want them to. So it might be a case of me just moving them to the other side of the stage. And in that process of moving somebody, I can then do the little manipulations that I need to do, whether that's with them or with the props that are up on stage, to then get the process back on track again.
Fantastic. So I'm fascinated by process. I love process, mate, because I'm an analytical kind of guy. What I really love about that is, you've thought about the outcome, the ta-da moment, and then you've gone into your toolbelt and thought, well, what are all the things that need to happen here? And I think, for those of us, who listen to this podcast, who run a dental practice, this is really what we talk about in our master planning exercise, where we're getting clarity about what's the outcome we're trying to achieve, and then going into our tool belts and seeing, what is it? Is it a marketing trick we need, or is it a finance trick we need, or is it a whatever trick we need? And I don't want to use the word trick because it's not trick. It's just a process. Mm-hmm. And what I'm curious to understand about mentalism as a form of magic, and this is perhaps something that is a little off the beaten track, is what is it about humans that want to believe in something that's not real? I'm sure you probably get asked that question a few times, but I'm just curious about our own psychology, where we go, I know the lady's not going to be sawn in half. I know she's not really cut in half, but I want to believe that she's cut in half and there's two boxes with her body on either side of the stage in that particular instance, or whatever magic trick that's happening. Why is it that humans want to believe that?
I think deep down in all of us, there is that inner child.
Yeah.
Over the years, as we get older, we get more serious.
Boring.
We tend to smother that inner child. And we can often feel, I think, very vulnerable when we show that side of ourselves, especially to other people, because we might be worried that it might damage our credibility. It might make us look less professional. Magic is, it almost gives you an excuse. Mm. It gives you an excuse to be childlike. And who doesn't want to see something that is impossible?
Yeah.
We all want to see that, to be able to say to somebody, I saw something that was impossible. This is breaking news. I want to be able to tell it to you. It makes us feel good when we can share those stories. And I feel that magic, mentalism, it does that. Hypnosis is another one. Mm. It also allows that to happen. And my takeaway from that is it is a little bit of a shame that we have suppressed our inner child so much that sometimes we can't just allow ourselves to just have fun. And I see that quite a lot as an entertainer. And I think that in business, sometimes some of the best moments in my businesses, and that's with the carpentry business and also with my entertainment business, some of the best moments that have really changed the way that I've done stuff has been when I've just allowed myself to play.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden I've discovered something new, because when we play, we have fun, but we also experiment and we try out things a little bit differently. And it doesn't necessarily mean that every time you play, you're going to find something new.
No.
But it does open up, I think, a different creative side of your brain that allows you to think differently.
I love it. I think it's fantastic. I know that the art of playing, or the ability to play, is something that, I certainly feel for most of us as adults has gone by the wayside. And I'm always remembering those businesses that seem to embrace a lot of fun in what they do, genuinely, not just say we have fun. One of our core values is fun. Can't you see by the half grimace on my face that we're having fun now, right? that kind of thing, right? But the people that genuinely embrace it, I'm thinking of businesses like the Pike Fish Markets in Seattle, the Seattle Fish Markets. They have fun, they play, they do those sorts of things, and that makes going to work that much easier. And I think you're right; it does loosen up the creativity. If we had the ability to put up, let's just say we could have a show, and we had Anthony Lay, mentalist, coming to a dental practice near you, right?
Yep.
And you were going to put on a performance for a room full of dentists and their teams and all the rest of it, right? And I'm not going to give you any, I'm not going to say like the others did about the engineers. Dentists, they're good. They're great. You'll have a good time with them. What sort of lessons, if you were going to draw a show or create a show for dentists running a practice, dealing with people in all the things that they do, and you wanted to create some experiences and have lessons come out of those experiences. My question would be, what sort of show would you design in terms of what would the act look like, and then what would the lesson be as the corollary of that?
So
one night only, Anthony Lay coming to a place near you.
So the mentalism routines I would use,
yes,
and I would use as, I suppose, metaphors,
yes,
for sharing a message. There would definitely be something in there based around how we are always being influenced by our surroundings, by our environment, by things that are going on around us, by the people that are around us. We're always being influenced and being aware of how that impacts us. I think the next thing would be around confidence, because
how would you demonstrate that? Are you able to say that, or am I asking too much?
So with the influence, there's a particular routine that I do where I get some people in the audience to call some things out.
Yep.
They end up calling out exactly the same things that I predicted ahead of time.
Yes.
And so it all happens from me putting people on the spot, having a psychological edge over them to make them call out certain things.
Yes.
So then that allows me to then share that message of that you're always being influenced.
Yes.
Then when it comes into confidence, there's a little thing that I do in one of my keynotes that I present, where I instantly instill fear into everybody in the room.
Oh, wow.
By something that I say. And just in case this show ever actually manages to manifest, because who knows? We've now put it out there into the ether. Now, while I'm not woo-woo, we have put it out there.
Oh, I'm putting it out there for a reason, Anthony. So just, you know.
Yeah, so I would create a moment where everybody all of a sudden is that they feel uncomfortable in the room.
Yes.
And through that, it allows me to share a simple tool that I use on stage. I'm happy to share this actually on the podcast there, but we can loop back to it if you want to.
Yeah, sure.
On how when we're in an awkward situation or when a moment suddenly arises and it's it causes you to tense up. There's a tool that I use on stage which allows you to maintain your confidence. Now, the reason why this is so important is because a lack of confidence is one of the fastest things that's going to impact the level of trust that we have with another person.
Yes.
We may say the right thing, but if somebody picks up non-verbally and by the way that we're using our voice that something isn't quite right, they're going to go with how they feel rather than what they've heard.
Yes.
And so being able to notice when our confidence has been rumbled and be able to react to it in the moment is really powerful in order to be able to maintain those levels of trust.
Mm-hmm.
Now, from that, I would then talk about body language. Body language is something that absolutely fascinates me, the way that we can use our body to influence and persuade others, but then also at the same time, be able to understand the way that another person might be thinking or feeling at any moment in time. And so that I do with a lie detection test. I've got a little lie detection test that I can do, and I point out all the different body language things that are happening. And that would then lead me into our communication skills.
Yeah.
Because our ability to communicate will have a direct impact on how successful we're going to be. You could be the best dentist in the world.
Mm-hmm.
However, if you can't communicate that to somebody, then it doesn't matter how good you are. And this is the reason why, and I see it time and time again, and I hear it at conferences, you'll see somebody with lesser skills move faster up through the ladder. You'll see somebody with lesser skills have a much better business. The reason why is because they're able to communicate that to somebody much more effectively than somebody who's highly skilled but can't communicate. And so those two things, now, obviously you do need to have some level of skill, but that's what those people that reach that 1%, they become that top tier, is because they're really good at communicating what it is that they have to offer, whether that's a product, a service, or an idea.
Love that. Okay. Well, I think we've just got our, run sheet for the show there, right? How long's that show, by the way, just out of curiosity?
It's, that'll be 60 minutes.
All right, there we go. There's a 60-minute show right there. All right, done. ladies and gents on the podcast.
It is on.
Yeah, ladies and gents on the podcast, hit me up for messages if you want us to run the show, because we will. If we get people saying, yes, do it, we will do it. I hope that's okay if I say that out loud, Anthony.
Yep. It's out there now.
It's out there. We've put it out there. mate, I really just want to say thank you. I've thoroughly enjoyed our conversation today, and I came into this conversation, as I said to you before we started, with some broad themes of things I wanted to talk about and explore with you. And, you know, I never like to have a 20-question kind of exercise when we do a podcast. And I can tell you that the conversations I enjoy are always organic. And and this has been such a fun conversation. So from me to you, I really appreciate it. And I appreciate you for taking the time out of your day to come and hang with us. It's been immensely fun.
Thank you for inviting me on to share. I think that we've covered quite a lot in the space of a very short amount of time. So what I would encourage your community to do, and this is what I do at every single conference, is we all hear different things when we listen to somebody or when we're at a workshop or whatever it is. So I highly encourage your community to share with each other what your biggest takeaway is from this, because we all get different learnings. We're all hearing different things depending upon the situations that we're in. Like I said before, we're influenced by our surroundings and our environment. So you're all going to have got different stuff out of this. Something will have resonated with you more. And I always think it's really good to share that with others, because they might have missed it because they weren't listening for that at this time, but it might be relevant for them in the future.
Yeah. Thank you for mentioning that, Matt. I think that's a really good piece of advice. So, ladies and gents, you know, I'd really encourage you to do that. And certainly for the people in our community, we will be debriefing this particular episode and really diving deep into it. So, Anthony, if people want to find out more about you, obviously they can go to your website, anthonylay.com. But where else can people find you? Where else can people discover you? Where are you performing? Where are you on?
Most of my performances, they're all at conferences. So I don't do any public shows as such. If you wanted to learn more about communication skills, then YouTube is a platform I use. I'm pretty slack on the rest of the social media channels, to be honest. But YouTube, there's always content coming out, and it's all based around communication skills, public speaking. Or the other place will be at the show that you and I are now going to.
Yeah, that's what I was just about to say. I think we're committed to it, aren't we? We're doing this, so it'll be good.
Yeah.
Thank you once again, and let's talk soon.
Indeed.
Cheers.
Thank you, Jesse, and thank you everyone for listening as well.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast. For more episodes, go to drjessegreen.com/savvydentist. And to discover how to build a high-performance dental practice, visit drjessegreen.com and download the free report.